Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. Later in the show, we'll get the latest on gerrymandering. Yesterday, California Governor Gavin Newsom said he will move forward with a redistricting initiative aimed at countering GOP-led gerrymandering efforts in Texas, and that means the plan will go to voters in November. But first, we continue our discussions about the killings of Palestinian journalists in Gaza. Last Sunday, Al Jazeera's prominent journalist Anas al-Sharif, along with five of his colleagues, was killed in a deliberate Israeli attack on a media tent in Gaza City. Here is a report from Al Jazeera English's Amma Batwe. In this clip, you will hear from Jonathan Dagger with Reporters Without Borders.
Anas al-Sharif was one of Gaza's most prominent voices, documenting Israel's genocide from the north of the Strip. Mohammed Kreker was also a correspondent. He often reported on the destruction of Gaza City. Ibrahim al-Thaher worked with them as a cameraman, along with Mohammed Nofal. His pictures showed the hardships endured by Palestinians, all of them murdered by a targeted Israeli strike. They were in a media tent in Gaza City on Sunday night, outside al-Shifa Hospital. They'd been covering Israel's expanded military assault and occupation. Knowing his life was at risk, Anas wrote his own goodbye. Al Jazeera Media Network has condemned what it called a targeted assassination and urged the international community to halt Israel's attacks.
We've seen the killing of more than 200 journalists in the past 2 years in Gaza. This is an unprecedented number. This crime against the press, against journalism, will not stop as long as impunity continues. We are calling for a very strong international reaction.
Israel has killed several Al Jazeera journalists since it launched its war on Gaza. Here, Anas is covering the funeral of two of his Al Jazeera colleagues, Ismail Al-Hul and Rami Al-Rifi, killed in Israeli attacks last year. Veteran journalist Wael Al-Dakhdou was targeted and injured. His son Hamza, who also worked for Al Jazeera, was killed last January, as well as Wael's wife, daughter, and grandson. Israel's assault on Al Jazeera journalists and freedom of press in general is not new. In 2021, it bombed the media building in Gaza that housed the offices of the Associated Press and Al Jazeera. In 2022, journalist and household name across the Arab world, Shireen Abu Akleh, was shot and killed by an Israeli sniper while reporting from the occupied West Bank. And the Israeli government has banned Al Jazeera from operating in Israel and the occupied West Bank. Before he was murdered, Anas al-Sharif urged Palestinians not to be silenced. And many are now asking what it will take for Israel to be held fully accountable for its actions. Amma Boateng, Al Jazeera, for Inside Story.
Thanks to Al Jazeera for that report. Like so many journalists in Gaza, Anas al-Sharif, who was so well known, was so young, just 28 years old. According to Al Jazeera, he had two young children. He was born in the Jabalia refugee camp and graduated from Al-Aqsa University's Faculty of Media. His father was killed by an Israeli airstrike on the family home back in December 2023. And we should also mention that the other names of the reporters who were killed, Mohammed Nofal, an assistant cameraman and driver that day, Moam Aliwa, a freelance journalist who worked with Al Jazeera, and then Mohammed Al-Khaldi, a creator of a YouTube news channel. Well, joining us to discuss these latest killings is Afif Nasuli, a journalist and host of With Afif Nasuli. From March 27th to June 3rd, Afif got into Gaza as a humanitarian aid worker. The Israeli government still prohibits outside journalists from entering Gaza. Afif's friends, colleagues, and sources in Gaza were fainting because they did not have enough to eat. Afif wrote about his experience for The Intercept with support from the Pulitzer Center and the Fund for Investigative Journalism. Hi, Afif. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you so much for having me on.
You know, it's so hard to comprehend what's happening here, to think that nearly 270 journalists and media workers have been killed so far. And you look at the faces of these people, they're so young. And it's so important, Afif, to really highlight the fact that if it weren't for these young people, we would really have no idea what is happening in Gaza.
Yeah, I think it's really important to say that first and foremost. We are all more aware of this crime against humanity because of their commitment to documenting their people, documenting how there has been so many different kinds of massacres and different kinds of assaults and different kinds of strategies of eradication. And it was men and women like Anas who really are on the front lines, who were really on the front lines just trying to do their job with a sense of duty and a sense of extreme loyalty to just the truth and justice. And I think what we've experienced is a strategy of trying to like annihilate that truth and justice, trying to silence these people who are young. You know, I know I spent a lot of time in journalist tents when I was in Gaza, and I know a lot of those young men's friends and families. There are still many journalists in Gaza, and I think that we need to talk about this as protecting people. These are young people that are not in any way party to the conflict, and even if they were, the way that they're being killed is truly a crime.
It's also important to really highlight the fact that Israel is still not allowing outside journalists to get in. How unprecedented is that?
It's just it's part and parcel of a strategy to make sure no one knows what's going on. I went as a humanitarian aid worker because, to be honest, the Palestinian journalists covering this conflict, and when I say conflict, I mean this genocide, they're not only adequate, they're incredible. So I personally went as an aid worker who reported on my off duties, and I'm a reporter, so you can't, you know, but do journalism as a reporter. It's like comes from sort of a very, very high duty and feeling. And I think that I'd be remiss to say that we are being robbed of the types of humanity and the types of skill and talent that this world really needs. And I think that it's unprecedented for Israel to deny the amount of things that they're denying, whether it's food, medical supplies, or journalists going in. I mean, yeah, it's unbelievable that journalists can't get into the enclave, but it's much more unbelievable that fuel and medical supplies and food and enough calories are also not being let in. So this is just part and parcel of their strategy to eradicate Palestinians and then occupy Gaza.
What's been also disturbing is reading articles about Al Jazeera's prominent journalist Anas Al-Sharif. So many of the articles say, along with his colleagues, and they don't name them. And it's disturbing because these are people who deserve to be named.
Yeah, absolutely.
These people have stories. I mean, the fact that we even have to say this, it says so much.
Yeah, Mohammed Kreika is a family member of a dear friend of mine, and he's one of them that gets often not listed. And I think that what's unbelievable also is that we kind of come to these people as they die, or we know very well about the story through death. But it's like I've just been trying to encourage people ever since I've gotten back from Gaza to really look at Gaza as a place to protect, because there are still people alive. Every day people die and are being murdered, but the truth is there's also a lot of vibrance and life and people who are real and have families and have love and have really mundane parts of their day, and they deserve the right to just be alive. And they also deserve the right to be more so than just alive. They deserve our protection because they're doing a service to humanity as being journalists in such a intense, chaotic, really, you know, murderous situation.
Anas Baba has been doing incredible work for NPR, and sometimes I wonder, how has he managed to survive? I mean, we would not be getting these NPR pieces about what's happening in Gaza if it weren't for Anas Baba. And there are photographers whose photos are on the front pages of the New York Times and other media outlets. Can you describe to us what it is like in Gaza. I mean, to think that people are losing their loved ones, I wonder how they're grieving. To think that this very prominent journalist was killed and his father was killed in an airstrike on the family home in December 2023. First of all, how do you grieve in this horrific situation? Second, what is it like? Because you were there from March 27th to June 3rd. How are they even able to do this work, given what's happening all around them?
Yeah, it's a really important question because I want to place people in context and like how it feels on your body when you're there. It's very loud. There's bombs happening all over all the time. And that is very, very stressful. You know, there's a low hum, sometimes it's a high hum of drones and quadcopters shooting. There's strikes down the road, strikes a mile away. So there's a lot of tension. And then you're hungry. You haven't eaten probably all day. Some people, you know, it fluctuates because there was at times no aid coming in at all for months, and then, you know, trickles in here and there. And everyone's experience is different. But some people aren't eating for 2 days. Some people aren't eating for, you know, enough time where they're extremely hungry doing all of this as well. So on top of that, you're just in an adrenaline rush of trying to be the best you possibly can for the people around you because your perspective is so clear, right? Like in this experience, your perspective is clear. You're not really going to be focused on things that don't matter. And I think that in that, there is no grieving. There is a lot of movement, and there is a lot of moving, and there's a lot of trying, and there's a lot of fighting and fighting in the way of, you know, being sort of, you know, being your inner warrior. But when it comes to just having space and time to grieve, I think that's a part of this tragedy, is that on top of all of the physical pain, there is a lot of mental stress, and there's a lot of impossibility over dealing and managing with feelings that are still still unfolding because of so much happening around you.
And when you really think about it, in the example of Anas Baba, for example, Anas al-Sharif, they're right there when there's a targeted airstrike. People are screaming, dying, and they're telling the story. They're sending the audio. They're sending the photos. I mean, it's just hard to comprehend how they're getting this important work out.
I think that from my conversations with different journalists in Gaza, and just being there and watching and being part of it, and also having experience doing the same thing, I think what it is that journalism is in some ways a savior to a lot of us who are either really close to the situation, inside the situation, especially for people there. They're working very hard, but it's from their hearts. It's from their spirits. It is nourishing in a way that I think helps a lot of people, honestly. There's a commitment to documenting, and a commitment and sort of a spiritual alignment. And I think that speaks volumes to the ways in which Palestinians are living and how they just maintain such discipline and love within such a hard time. But I imagine that while it is incredibly hard and it is impossible to imagine how someone can keep going, I do think journalism is in many ways a lifeline.
We're speaking with Afif Nasuli, journalist and host of With Afif Nasuli. From March 27th to June 3rd, Afif got into Gaza as a humanitarian aid worker and wrote about his experience for The Intercept. If you have any questions or comments for Afif about what he saw in Gaza, your thoughts about so many Palestinian journalists who have been killed, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Afif, according to NPR, this latest killing marked the first time that Israel's military swiftly claimed responsibility after Anas al-Sharif was killed. And I just wonder what your thoughts are on this. What do you think about how these reporters were targeted, knowing that this would generate so much anger around the world?
You know, it's hard to know what to say other than maybe they're getting more brazen and bold and aware of the fact that they're not being stopped. I think that they have the same sort of accusations all the time that fall flat. And I think that it just seems like to me that the Israelis are hell-bent on exercising and executing a strategy of total occupation and total takeover. And I think we're watching it, and, you know, we're watching it slowly. And I think that, listen, we don't know the future and we don't know their intentions all of the time. I can't speak for every sort of official, but it's moments like this where you realize, listen, they're trying to silence the people who are telling the world what's going on. Why else would you do that other than to do things in the dark that are probably, you know, crimes against humanity? And so, like, that's how I react to it. I think that they are brazen and they have a strategy and no one is stopping them. And so we need to think of ways to get our officials to feel differently about what's going on immediately.
We're going to do another show about this, but CNN had a piece just a few days ago. Netanyahu defends Gaza City takeover as UN warns of calamity and international condemnation grows. I also just want to ask you about how journalist organizations are or are not responding to all of this. What are your thoughts about what we're hearing, what we're not hearing?
I think that there's been a tragedy of, listen, there's been a tragedy of coverage. I think the fact that our voices are just raising, I always say, like, that if, you know, there's always this question of, is there a sea change in tone? And it's like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't feed Gazans. Like, this tone needed to be very bold and certain in October and in November and December of 2023, because it was already happening. And I think now we're watching all of those mistakes have material results, which is the eradication of Gaza 2 years on. And I think that what we've missed is calling it a genocide early and not really just arguing about it, making sure that international humanitarian law, the laws of conflict, were followed. And the fact that occupation and having 75 years of an occupation and blockading a place over and over and over again was going to obviously lead to some extreme climax in violence. And the fact of the matter is that the lack of coverage for years and decades before this are what lead everyone to assume that it's okay that one country can control another country's water, land, and sea. That should never be something that is okay. And journalists failed to really, really doggedly call that out as it became worse and worse over the years, and especially as it became obvious and horrifying in the last 2 years. I do think that the thing is, trends change and information becomes clearer. And I do think where we're getting to now is a place that we should have gotten to a long time ago. But while we're here now, I do think that it's important that all journalists really get braver about the subject, because it really is dire. People really should never, ever experience a genocide in their lifetime. This is so barbaric and arcane.
We're going to play a clip from Jody Ginsburg, who's CEO of the Committee to Protect Journalists. She was on Morning Edition on Wednesday. The Committee to Protect Journalists put out a statement saying Israel is murdering the messengers.
We have been raising the alarm regarding the safety of journalists and the lack of international protection for them since the start of the war. And unfortunately, we have felt that oftentimes we were shouting into the void. And to us, Sunday represented a significant escalation in the dangers for journalists because, as I say, Israel was very open in saying that it had targeted Anas al-Sharif, but they have not been able to explain what justified killing those other journalists and those who are civilians in that tent where they were doing their job.
What does accountability look like?
Accountability looks like credible, transparent investigations and individuals responsible for those killings being held accountable. There are rules of engagement. There are international humanitarian laws. There are rules related to how you conduct wars. And in many cases, we do not believe that those are being followed. And this would make some of those killings war crimes.
That's Jody Ginsberg, CEO of the Committee to Protect Journalists. She was on Morning Edition on Wednesday. She says, if we do not act now, there will be no one left in Gaza to tell anyone's story, and that silence, those deaths, will be on us. Afif, is there any way to know at this point how many journalists are left in Gaza?
Listen, I know hundreds of journalists. Everybody in Palestine exalts the idea of journalism. There are still young people who want to become journalists. I think, listen, there are attacks left and right and they are silencing them, but we must amplify those there that are still working, still, you know, sort of working in the name of people like Anas and Shireen Abu Ali and all of these other people that were extrajudicially murdered, you know, by Israelis. So I think that the truth is like, I have no number, right? I know personally so many. And there is the idea that we should fear their annihilation, but I think what we need to do is step into our power and our support and really amplify them and get to know them and make them too much to touch. Because the truth is that really understanding who people are and getting an opinion and being vocal about your opinion and your you know, intention to protect people really does make a difference on the world stage in ways that I don't know that we can fathom. So I really just want to point to the fact that there are people there that are still all over your feeds and on and also like on NPR, like NS, that need to be amplified and supported and protected and vocally sort of protect, you know, and that should come vocally and in any way that, you know, we can.
Just before he was killed, before Anas al-Sharif was killed, Al Jazeera shared a devastating post. He writes, I haven't stopped covering the crisis for a moment in 21 months, and today I say it outright and with indescribable pain. I am drowning in hunger, trembling in exhaustion, and resisting the fainting that follows me every moment. Gaza is dying, and we die with it. And to so many people, these young people are writing these letters in case they die. And this is happening too often.
Yeah, I think that these are becoming a part of culture in some ways in Gaza right now to really, you know, document things like your thoughts and your hopes and your will and your advice, because it is such a, you know, when something that awful happens, it's likely that there's so many things happening around you that you see God a lot. You just become more spiritual. And I think that these people have become extremely high vibration versions of themselves. And I think that they want and need to be heard, whether it's posthumously, you know, it's such a tragedy that it is posthumously that we're hearing and really reading his words like this. But the truth is they're all teachers of sorts in ways that like they shouldn't have to be, and they've been forced into being. But I do think we really just need to amplify their voices before they die and really try to protect them while they're alive.
Are you planning to go back to Gaza?
I am planning to apply to go back to Gaza. I don't know that, you know, after all of these interviews and everything, that they will greenlight me going back in. And when I say them, I mean Israel. But if they do, I will go back with Glia happily. And we've already discussed it, and they would be happy to have me back. And, I would just hope that if I do go back, and when I do go back, it'll be a totally different situation, because it's to a degree of catastrophe now that I'm worried for my colleagues and my sources and my friends there. Like, I just worry for their actual health day to day.
What are you working on right now?
I'm continuing the Pulitzer grant, which is looking into how the U.S. The cutting of U.S. aid funding affects queer people around the world. I'm also looking into, of course, reporting on school and the lack of school in Gaza, and other sort of subjects along those lines.
Well, thank you so much for joining us again, and thank you for your work. Afif Nasuli is a journalist and host of With Afif Nasuli. From March 27th to June 3rd, Afif got into Gaza as a humanitarian aid worker. The Israeli government still prohibits outside journalists from entering Gaza, and if it were not for the Palestinian journalists, we would have no idea what's going on. Afif wrote about his experience for The Intercept with support from the Pulitzer Center. Thank you so much, Afif.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. And I just wanted to point out an article I came across the other day. Gaza's young musicians sing and play in the ruins of war. Photography and reporting by Dawood Abu Alkas. So a journalist inside of Gaza bringing us really this beautiful story about these young people playing music and instruments. A boy's lilting song filled the tent in Gaza City above instrumental melodies and backing singers' quiet harmonies. Soft music that floated into streets more attuned these days to the deadly beat of bombs and bullets. And there's these beautiful photos of young girls and boys playing a variety of beautiful instruments. But they point out that the students and the teachers are very hungry, and therefore they have to overcome their weaknesses, from food shortages to attend their music classes in tents. It's really just a beautiful story, and I hope you can take the time to read it and look at these photographs. You can find it at klw.org, click news, and then your call. Coming up after a break, we will talk about gerrymandering and the announcement we heard from California Governor Gavin Newsom yesterday. We'll also talk about the bigger picture. This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. We'll be back after this.